He worked against Catholic interests everywhere, and of course, he was personally responsible for dismantling the last Catholic empire, whose head of state was Blessed Karl von Habsburg.
Yeah.
So this man was extremely anti-Catholic and hated Catholics and hated Catholicism, but he had this idea that the Anglo-Americans should form an alliance. The English and the Americans should form an alliance and we'll rule the world. And this is what World War One was largely about. And after World War One, of course, he remaps Europe and creates these impossible states that are amalgamations of different people. And of course, everything sets the stage for World War Two, right? For the Nazis and the commies to divide Europe all up. He created this vacuum when he destroyed these empires, and including the last Catholic empire. But Wilson had personal contempt for Catholic bishops. But if you read the correspondence between Gibbons, Cardinal Gibbons, and Wilson, Gibbons was an utter sycophant. He was an utter sycophant to Wilson. He was a real bootlicker. And one time when he actually appeared to speak to President Wilson, Wilson didn't even invite him to sit down. He dispatched with him in a few minutes and sent him away. And the 83-year-old Cardinal Gibbons was actually shaken when this happened. And he complained to Bishop Ireland, and Bishop Ireland said, well, he wouldn't do the same thing to me, only to have exactly the same thing happen to him when he went to go meet with Wilson.
Gave his last words.
Yeah, but all the while, they were defending the big government, war machine, big statism, lots of international wars, to sort of impress this Anglo-American hegemony on the world, because this is our destiny. And you can see it in that letter I keep referring to Bishop Ireland from Bishop Dennis J. O'Connell that talks about the greasers. And this is back in 1898, again, during the Spanish-American War. So you're dealing with a sycophantic almost envious. They were envious of the Anglo-American power, and they wanted to sort of tap into that. That's what we had largely for bishops, at least among the Americanists. And this was a very unhealthy spirit. Now, you had a lot of people who were not part of that, people with a real Catholic spirit and a real evangelical spirit, mm-hmm. and they stand out in stark contrast.
Yeah, I think of Frank Sheed, who's preaching in the middle of New York City in Central, was Central Park he was one of the big areas in New York City.
Yeah, I'm not sure where he went in New York, but he would speak publicly in a lot of places.
Yeah.
And you had other, you had great missionaries from overseas who would come here, and you had great American lay apostles who were going around. You had in New England, you had way back in colonial days, you had Father Thayer, who was whose family came over on the Mayflower. You had the Belgian Father Nierinx in Kentucky. They call him the Bluegrass Apostle. You had Blessed Francis Xavier Salos, who worked in Maryland and various other places and ended up dying in my own natal city of New Orleans, where his relics are in this gorgeous reliquary in a church in the Irish Bayou section of New Orleans. So you had the Redemptorists, by the way. You had a bunch of really good Redemptorists. Of course, we have to mention Saint John Nepomuchen Neumann, who was a contemporary of Blessed Francis Xavier Salos. These are the quality of men, the Redemptorists, that the Paulists sort of rebelled from and didn't want to be part of that. So there were notable exceptions on the other side. I named them earlier, Bishop Bernie McQuaid, I'm forgetting which diocese it was. Was it Ogdensburg? I don't know if it was Ogdensburg. That's the most northern bishopric in New York. I think it was Rochester, New York. So you had really good exceptions to this, but who opposed the doctrinal errors. And I think one thing that you didn't get enough of in America to offset it was monasticism, because frankly, that's one of the real answers to the Americanist errors, is monasticism. Because they had this idea, look, we're building a church, it's a new country. We need people to do active things. So they had all these teaching sisters, they had these nursing sisters, they had teaching brothers, there were a lot of, there was secular clergy, but there was generally a downplaying of monasticism. Now, you ended up, though, getting the Trappists coming here and various Benedictine groups coming here and even Carmelites. And what we're seeing now, right now, Steve, is an explosion of Carmels that are traditional. Right? In this country.
Right.
I think you know of some of them.
Or even the Benedictines in Gower.
The Benedictines in Gower, exactly. This is one of the remedies to Americanism, because the big error of Americanism was this divide, aside from the political stuff and aside from the idea that the church in America is going to be new and something different than the church in Europe. One of the big errors is this downplaying of the interior life, the downplaying of monasticism, the downplaying of penance and vows, and at the expense, all of that was set aside to advance the so-called active virtues. So we're a country that focused on building. In this diocese, in the Manchester, New Hampshire diocese, there was a bishop named Bishop Brady, and Bishop Brady was one of the early bishops of Manchester, New Hampshire, and he was called Brady the Builder. So this, why? Because he built hospitals and schools and parishes galore. But this is what was going on, and unfortunately, what happened? It wasn't much later that all of those buildings got emptied of people, because I don't think they found the most important thing, which was the interior life of the faithful. It was a very superficial brand of religion that was being taught, and Americanism is incredibly superficial. It's an incredibly superficial religion.
I've heard that before. We have all these teaching religions coming up, but the interior lives were so bad that they basically just was teaching poorly, not poorly, I guess, but teaching enough error to kind of squash what could have been done.
And by the way, of course, I'm a teacher myself. I mean, we have a school. I'm not against teaching. I'm not against teaching sisters. I'm not against bring them on, you know, the De La Salle brothers, the Xavier and brothers, the Holy Cross brothers, and priests, and the various groups of sisters. It's wonderful. I come from New Orleans, and it's like in the old days, it was like a tropical aviary with all of these religious women in different habits walking around. That's a great thing, but don't get rid of your Carmelites. Don't get rid of your cloistered Benedictines. Don't get rid of your Dominican nuns. You know, don't do that, because without that, the church doesn't have an interior. You know, and I'm not to say that active religious don't pray. They have to, otherwise they leave. They lose their vocation. They lose their internal spirit. There is this thing called the soul of the apostle, like that book says.
Heard of it.
But a wonderful book, and it was written by a Trappist. When you do away with the cloistered form of the religious life, you lose so much of the Catholic life. And also another thing, and this is one of the great things about the current permutation of the traditionalist movement in America, it's becoming more and more liturgical. Mm-hmm. This is another thing that was downplayed: solemn masses and processions. And, you know, long ceremonies. Well, my goodness, why do you need all that music? And why do you have to have all that chant? And, you know, the melismas in the chant take too long. Just sing a good old hymn and then, you know, be done with it. That was part of the Americanist spirit as well. This minimalization of the church's sacred rites, which is why, you know, there's that book. I don't know if you ever read it, but it's called Why Catholics Can't Sing. And it's kind of funny because it talks about this downplaying of the liturgical life that was kind of traditional in America, tradition with a small T, obviously. But now we're recapturing a lot of that stuff. And I think we're laying the foundations of a genuine renaissance in Catholic life here in America. And I know some people might think I'm nuts for saying that, but trust me, it is being built.
Well, especially with the COVID-1984 rubrics. And a lot of people are flocking to, hey, where can we go? And it's really the diocese traditional priests that are open, because they understand the meaning of souls.